A police conversation at Normal PD escalated quickly.
You cannot search me or take my items with giving me no reason.
The woman refused to give up her phone and was later arrested. She has sued. Experts analyze the police response coming up on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Also on today's show, a community mourns the death of two students with a candlelight vigil.
And I just saw so many sad high schoolers, and I thought we need something. We need to hug them.
Plus, Emily Calandrelli has become one of the few female voices on space exploration.
I would be one of two, sometimes three women in a 50-person class filled with guys, and that was super intimidating.
The Netflix junior star speaks at ISU for Science and Technology Week. Those stories follow a Bloomington Normal News update, which is just ahead. This is WGLT Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Hear My Story continues with local patient Ryan Fuller and his mother, Stephanie.
I believe it's made a big impact. I believe that if you have hearing loss, you should get it checked, you know? It's just been so helpful, and I don't know what I'd do without it.
Ryan and Stephanie's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. Video of an arrest at the Normal Police Department has prompted a social media furor, and the incident has resulted in a lawsuit against the department. What civilian eyes may see as an injustice, though, can look perfectly reasonable to those familiar with law enforcement. WGLT's Charlie Schlenker reports.
18-year-old Taylor Brown had gone to the police department in the wee hours of an early February morning to give an interview after a fire at her residence. She waited quite a while for a detective and then wanted to go home. Video footage from officer body cams shows what happened next.
So we're going to have to seize your phone, so go ahead and hang up.
Seize my phone for what?
Go ahead and hang up.
Why?
Go ahead and hang up.
They want to seize my phone, but I'm not under arrest for anything.
You're not under arrest, but your phone's going to be seized.
No.
You're gonna hang up the phone.
So far, it's an orderly conversation. Brown was talking with her mom, who works for the Chicago Police Department. Brown kept asking why they wanted the phone. Officers kept saying the matter was under investigation. It went downhill. 12 minutes later, Brown was on the floor in handcuffs, about to go to jail for aggravated battery of an officer. One officer said on video Brown had kicked her when officers took Brown to the floor to get the phone.
What is happening right now? I came down here because I thought I was doing an interview. Why am I in cuffs?
Oh, I'd like to still interview you. That's not.
But why am I in cuffs? I'm scared. Why are you all touching me? Why is my stuff being seized? You told me I was coming here for an interview. I came here under false pretenses.
Social media reaction to the video has been harsh and negative toward police. Brown has filed a federal lawsuit against several officers and the department alleging they violated her civil rights. Illinois State University Criminal Justice Sciences Professor Michael Gizzi says officers continually pressed Brown to give up the phone and told her she was not leaving with it. Gizzi calls that troubling.
It was as if the officer was almost goading her. She was escalating conflict instead of de-escalating a situation.
Another criminal justice sciences prof at ISU has a different take. Bill Lally is also a police officer. Lally acknowledges the repetition of the same set of words could be viewed as provocative. But he says the reason officers do that kind of thing stems from a desire to stay on one line of dialogue. Lally says argument usually doesn't produce a resolution, so officers do not stray from the intent. They need that phone. A lot of online comment deals with the police lack of a search warrant, and Brown reacted on the video as if officers saying that the fire is under investigation is not enough of an explanation.
You cannot search me or take my items with giving me no reason.
That is not accurate. Bill Lally says officers don't need a warrant if they can argue that if they don't intervene immediately, the potential for evidence to be destroyed is high. Lally says officers could have said more about why they wanted the phone, but in an investigation, it's not always a good idea to do that.
But the caveat is you've now let them know that you're concerned that they may, given enough time, destroy evidence that's in their phone. So if you're ultimate goal is to secure the phone without any attempt to delete any information, And then you're probably not going to tell him why you want the phone.
Civilian viewers of the video may think that Brown got in trouble when she physically resisted the police seizure of the phone. Lolly says she actually may have broken the law earlier when she refused to comply with a lawful order. Another question by those who watched the video is why the Normal Police Department needed four officers to deal with Brown. Lolly says a person can be polite and conversational one moment and then try to knife an officer the next. He says demeanor is not always a guide to how an interaction will go, and having more resources nearby can be safer not only for officers but for the person being arrested. Lolly acknowledges if officers had clarified what they were after or tried in a different way to talk Brown down as things escalated, they might have reduced tension. But that doesn't mean they did anything wrong at the time.
I have to be very careful not to be an armchair quarterback. You know, we don't have all the information as to what the particulars of this investigation involved.
And there is still an investigation, even though the police department was not initially successful in getting a search warrant to look at what was on the phone after they took it from Brown. The police motive of investigation can come in tension with the department goal to build strong relationships in the community and public confidence. It certainly worked that way for Taylor Brown that night.
I came out here willingly because I trusted you. And look at what you're doing.
It's possible to do everything right in an investigation and still be wrong in the eyes of the public. ISU's Bill Lolly says police agencies realize there needs to be more community engagement and conversations with community members to gain compliance and trust instead of becoming what he calls an authoritarian organization that does what it does because the means justify the outcome of solving crime. Some departments have made the transition easier than others, Lolly says. As body cameras become more prevalent among police agencies across the nation, there will be more examples of this tension playing out in public. Lolly says he's not sure police should change tactics, but that the public should have more education about what police do and why they choose a particular course of action. He says that's not happening everywhere.
Within the policing world, it is the belief that the average citizen not only doesn't understand why the average officer does what they do, but is almost looking for things to chastise a police department for.
Lolly says as a result, some police departments shut down that conversation with the general public. The police chief for the town of Normal disagrees with Lolly. Stephen Petrilli declines to talk about the specifics of the Taylor Brown case because of the investigation and the lawsuit. But Petrilli says he doesn't see law enforcement agencies turning inward the way Lolly does.
From everything that we do in social media to the events in which we host and the events in which we have a police presence at now are much more robust than what I remember them being 10, 20 years ago. You know, we are doing a lot better job of engaging with the community and making sure that they see us as a partner and not as a detriment.
Petrilli says even though body cams can result in misunderstanding by the public, they do increase accountability. And that bodes well for police and the public because it encourages conversation about officer decisions, in addition to efforts to be more accessible and active in the community.
So we can create trust, we can create transparency, and knowing that, you know, if an incident does happen and the police department, you know, maybe we didn't do something right, the expectations that we come out and we own that. And I think that that's the trust that you try to build with communities. So if an incident, you know, does come up, the trust and transparency is already there.
Yet video can also erode trust, even if officers are just doing their jobs. ISU Professor Michael Gizzi says members of the public who are already leery of actions with law enforcement take videos like this one as confirmation of their existing belief.
I mean, to me, the true lesson is, and it's an unfortunate one, but I would never, under any circumstances, go to a police department for any interview at all without an attorney present. Because you have no idea what the reason is and what they're thinking as to why they want to question you.
And Gizzi says it's never going to look good when officers use force. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Developers want to run a carbon dioxide pipeline through central Illinois, including McLean County. Tomorrow, right here on Sound Ideas, hear how carbon capture technology works, how it's being touted as a climate change solution. But critics say the pipelines are potentially dangerous. Hundreds of mourners took part in a candlelight vigil at Prairie Central High School in Livingston County over the weekend. It was to honor the lives of two students, WGLT's Eric Stock reports.
Lewis Field in Fairbury has been the site for many celebrations. Last weekend, it was a site for mourning. Drew Fair and Dylan Bazil were responsible for many of the good times at Prairie Central's football home that parents and fans experienced in recent years. The multi-sport athletes excelled in any competition they entered, leading the rural Livingston County School to one of its most successful stretches of sports achievement in its history. Fair and Bazil were also the focus of Saturday's somber gathering as hundreds took part in a prayer vigil to honor their lives. The 17-year-old Fair and 18-year-old Bazil died in a ski-related accident last week during a spring break trip at a ski resort in Colorado, weeks before they were set to graduate. First Baptist Church of Fairbury pastor Brian King is an avid Hawks sports fan. He recalls Fair and Bazil always displayed humility, even though they were larger than life to many fans, including grade school basketball players Fair and Bazil would come to watch play on Saturday mornings.
And these little kids would just look up to them and just like, you know, they were like, we want your autograph. We want to know. They were so gracious to be able to do that. But yet at the same time, they were so humble, you know, and they shined in everything that they did.
Hillary Blackwell, Prairie Central's cheerleading coach, organized the vigil. She says she was inspired to do something after seeing so many students struggle to cope with losing two of their classmates.
And I just saw so many sad high schoolers, and I thought, we need something. We need to hug them, but we can't hug every single one of them. So I thought, what is an event where we can just bear hug our whole community and we can all be there for one another?
Blackwell estimates the candlelight vigil drew about 600 participants. Many left flowers and mementos below photos of the young men, with the words "Forever in Our Hearts" inscribed below Fair and Bazil's names.
I think that it really just speaks to who Drew and who Dylan were, how good they were to all of us, and this is something that we can show of how important they were.
Drew Fair and Dylan Bazil were two of Prairie Central's most decorated athletes in recent memory. Fair was an all-state football player who helped lead the Hawks to an undefeated regular season and a berth in the state quarterfinals last fall. Bazil earned all-state in basketball as the Hawks reached the number one ranking in the state and matched a school record 31 wins. Bazil won second place in the state high jump. Fair took third at state in the pole vault. Trevin McCullough is assistant boys basketball coach at Prairie Central. He didn't focus on any athletic achievement when he was asked to reflect on Fair and Bazil's legacies. He said he could not put into words the time he spent with them over the last 4 years.
It's not really the game of basketball. It's just being around them and filling the memories of doing all this together. That's what I'm thankful for. I'm not thankful for 31 wins, a regional championship, a conference championship. I'm thankful for the time that we were fortunate to have with them.
The Prairie Central School District canceled classes for Monday and Wednesday for students, teachers, and staff to attend Fair and Bazil's funerals. I'm Eric Stock.
Prairie Central High School has counselors available to help students, faculty, and staff. Kent Kasson from Fairbury News contributed to this report. Stories and conversations around Bloomington Normal, McLean County, and Central Illinois. This is WGLT's Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. It's Science and Technology Week at Illinois State University, and tomorrow evening, Emily Calandrelli will give the event's keynote address. Calandrelli is an MIT-trained aerospace engineer who interned with NASA. But a decade ago, she made a giant leap from studying space to sharing her passion for science with others. Calandrelli has worked with Bill Nye, the science guy, and hosts the Emmy-nominated show Exploration Outer Space. She's also an author and the host of Netflix Junior's Emily's Wonder Lab. In a conversation with WGLT's Lauren Wernicke, Calandrelli talks about being a woman in STEM and getting into television by accident.
It just kind of happened. So when I was graduating from MIT, I got a call from a production company that was like, we're developing this new educational space show. We want a space expert to be the host. Would you like to host this new TV show? And at first I was like, me? Like, what? Why would you? They had found some videos of me talking about science and space to different communities, to different kids, because I had done a lot of outreach throughout my educational career. And they found that I could talk about this stuff in a way that people who didn't have a background in aerospace engineering could understand it. And so that's how they found me. I thought that sounded like an adventure. I said yes. That was a decade ago. And so my career has just sort of snowballed ever since.
Going to MIT, and also I think you interned or worked with NASA at some point.
Yeah.
Okay, how was that? and particularly, I mean, I know it's tricky having to constantly be like, this is my experience as a woman, but you know, being in science, it being such a predominantly male industry, how was that for you? How did you fit in? Did you find people that you could relate to?
Right. It was a little weird at first, because when I was an undergrad, I would be one of two, sometimes three women in a 50-person class filled with guys. And that was super intimidating, because engineering on its own is intimidating because everybody knows it as, like, quote, one of the hard majors. And right. So for somebody who that didn't come naturally to, I was already a little bit intimidated. And then you walk into a room where you don't see anybody that looks like you, that feels even more intimidating. And so I think you just sort of develop these coping mechanisms. Mine was basically to, like, find a way to work by myself on so many things, which allowed me to better understand a lot of these concepts, because working in teams and groups proved to be really helpful for certain things. But for me, for somebody who didn't have a lot of confidence in myself in science and engineering, learning how to solve these problems on my own at first, at least, was a really crucial step for me to be able to develop the confidence in myself that I needed to be able to thrive in this field.
What initially drew you to engineering? Because you had to have had a marginal degree of confidence to go for that in the first place, right?
Right, exactly. So for me, my incentives to go into STEM, to go into engineering, are a little bit different than some of my classmates, because the people that I met, especially at MIT, they always had these stories of parents who knew all about science and engineering, parents who were PhDs, who were scientists and engineers themselves. And I am the first person in my family to pursue a degree in STEM. I didn't know anybody that had a STEM degree. Most of my extended family didn't go to college. Many of them didn't graduate high school. And so for me to pursue science was very out of the norm. And I did it because my dad grew up in poverty and he worked his way to bring my family to middle class. And I had that legacy in the back of my mind of, like working really hard to better your situation. And so for me, I was really interested in the money that an engineering job could provide. I Googled all the majors that one could major in college, and I looked at their starting salaries, and I found that engineers made the most money. And so I didn't go into it thinking, like, I'm going to love it. I went into it thinking, this is going to be really hard, but I'm going to get a good job and it's going to be worth it. And then I fell into this career that I absolutely adored, because along the way, I found all of these little surprises.
It's shocking to me that this is a 21st century story and you're still one of the only girls in the room. So, yeah. You know, how were you able to maybe turn those differences into advantages?
Yeah, I think especially when it comes to STEM and academia, you'll find that a lot of the people that go to these quote unquote elite colleges come from elite backgrounds. And a lot of those are usually from, like, the coasts. Anytime anybody has a unique perspective, that is going to be valuable in terms of innovation. And so for me, when I come from Appalachia, I come from a region of the country that is very unique. I come from coal country. When we're talking about science and the science of climate change, which is just how it works fundamentally, that's something different than the policy of affecting the climate, of preventing climate change, because the policy piece, that includes humans. And it becomes so much more complex, right? Because you can educate people all you want on how the science of climate change works, but to actually change their behavior, you have to understand the incentives of those humans. You have to understand where they're coming from, the problems that they personally experience, and how to incentivize them to perhaps change their behavior. And so when you have an insight into those humans' lives, those communities' lives, that can be invaluable.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Lauren Warnicke. My conversation with aerospace engineer Emily Calandrelli continues with how she translates rigorous science into a fun and engaging television show for kids.
3, 2, 1! Emily's Wonderland. Stay curious and keep
exploring. Emily's Wonderland. Where did you develop the passion for getting out of the academy, right, and not simply being in your kind of science bubble, but really trying to engage everybody else with, you know, rigorous scientific information?
Right. Well, I think it all stems back from where I come from and how I became interested in all of this, because I mentioned before, like, this didn't come naturally. I consider myself somebody who doesn't really have a background in all of this sort of stuff, even though I've studied it now for many, many years. But like my childhood, I didn't have a natural inclination to understand these sorts of things. And so today, when I find something like, ooh, wait, that's kind of cool. Like, oh, wait, it works like that. I'm always like, let's tap into that, because I bet other people who have a similar background and a similar mindset will find this interesting too. I don't kind of filter my excitement.
Y'all ready to walk on some eggs?
Yeah!
We don't need electricity, gas, matches. All we need is the power of the sun.
I feel like a mad scientist.
Because I think with science sometimes historically, we find it to be maybe like childish to like show our excitement. It feels almost like you are smarter if you don't find it impressive. Like if you don't find the way something works impressive. And what I've learned to do is not shield my humanity, not shield or filter my excitement from something. I just kind of let it shine through. Sometimes I think if we find ourselves excited by something, we don't want to show that off, because then that would reveal that we didn't expect it. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that it was going to act like that, which means that we didn't know everything. And to not know everything as someone who's a scientist or an engineer, like, oh my gosh, like, were you not properly trained? How did you not know that? How did you not expect that? So for me, I'm like, yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't expect it. It's joyful. It's exciting to me. And I don't shield my excitement away from the camera.
Emily Calandrelli speaks Tuesday evening at 7 in the Brown Ballroom at the Bone Student Center. The talk is free and open to the public. I'm Lauren Warnicke.
And at the tail end of Women's History Month, ISU Science and Technology Week concludes Friday with the Women in Leadership Conference. That day concludes with a panel of women working in male-dominated scientific and technical fields. And that's Sound Ideas today, WGLT's news magazine, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton. Story help today came from WGLT's Charlie Schlenker, Eric Stock, and Lauren Warnicke. The show was produced by Samantha Hill. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.